Blog Talk Radio.
We got blue.
Right, everyone, welcome to Talk Nerdy to Me Radio. It is our book and television edition. It is Tuesday, September 21st, 2021. That's a lot of 21s. My name is Megan, and I am here with the ever lovely Kristen. What's up, Kristen?
Nothing. I'm so excited to be here. Like, ridiculously stupid excited, guys, to be right here.
Yes, it's been a journey off air. I won't go into the details, but... anything that you can think could go wrong, went wrong in some capacity.
The only thing that didn't go wrong is we didn't get COVID, knock on wood.
This is true. That did not happen, thankfully. Nor were we, like, killed or, you know.
Right.
Something really drastic. But everything else totally went wrong. So, super excited to be back, and we are talking about something that both brings me and Kristen joy, which is our Harry Potter series is continuing with Prisoner of Azkaban. And we're also going to be talking about some television, which I'm super nerdy about, and I will explain more once we get there. And also books, which is basically Kristen's, like, I don't know, like, fairy dust of
vanity.
Joy. There you go.
It literally
so,
is. I got new book shirts. I have new shirts that say I'd rather be reading and bookish AF with nerdy glasses.
That's perfect for you.
It's true.
So lots of joyous things to be talked about today. So we'll get straight into it. Now for the entertainment news, really it's just surrounding the TV series, the TV season, because this is when we celebrate the old seasons of things with the Emmy Awards that happened over the weekend. As well as looking into some of the fall premieres of some new shows or returning favorites. So, Kristen, do you want to talk us through what is heading to the small screen as shows start to return?
Yeah, definitely. So, shows coming back. And a lot of these are shows I watch, and that's why I know about them, but there are quite a few. Basically, everything is coming back between now and, like, the first week of October. But with that said... The Big Leap aired last night. I haven't watched it yet. It's a new show. I don't quite understand what it's about. It's like, I supposedly about like a dance competition or like a play, but it's like a reality show, but it's not a reality show. It's acting. If that makes sense. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to let you know. The Resident on Fox is premiering tonight. The FBI series is back. Their regular FBI, FBI Most Wanted, and their new FBI International is coming tonight. Survivor starts this week, and they've been on hiatus for a while because they did not film at all during COVID until this year. So last year, where we normally get a season or two of Survivor, there was no Survivor. Masked Singer is back. I'm pumped about that. We can have bi-weekly conversations about who I think everyone is. We got A Million Little Things is coming back on ABC. The Chicago One series is coming back this week. Law and Order is coming back this week. And Megan, you'll be so proud. I finally finished Organized Crime, and it was insanely good at the end.
Right?
Like, I was like, why didn't the first couple episodes were meh, but they caught up. It was fine.
Well, I also think it's just the time to get used to him in this new format.
It did, and, like, the vibe of his team and, like, the other people trying to figure out who was good, who was bad. Like, it just took a little bit for me to get into it. But when I did get into it, I finished, like, six episodes in one sitting. So, fair.
Right on.
And then we got, next week, we got, like, La Brea. It's a new NBC show airing. I'll let you know because it's a disaster show on television. So it's, like, think disaster movie, like, San Andreas, but for TV. So I'll let you know how that is. Station 19 and Grey's Anatomy is doing a crossover premiere event next week, and Big Sky comes back as well next week. So there's a lot of stuff coming back.
Right on. So lots of really good things to watch. So excited. And then also the Yay. Emmys happened. And
yes,
if you
did.
Had to guess which network won the most Emmys, which network would you guess?
Oh, I have no idea. I would say ABC.
Well, network and streaming. I should say network or streaming.
Oh, probably, I'm going to say Hulu.
That's a good guess, but actually Hulu didn't do so great, surprisingly.
Oh,
Netflix wins the race on this one with many, like this includes even the smaller ones, the smaller awards and forward, but 44 total Emmys to some degree. I know, right? HBO Max followed, Disney Plus, Apple TV, NBC, and then so on. So it's still the streaming sites that are dominating the TV world in terms of like awards, which is not surprising. Because that's just how it's always been. As for major awards, Ted Lasso won Outstanding Comedy Series. Jason Sudeikis also won Best Lead Actor in a Comedy. And for Lead Actress, in a Comedy went to Jean Smart, who's in the show Hacks, which I've never seen. And then for Outstanding Drama Series, it went to The Crown. And then both lead actor and lead actress came from The Crown. Josh O'Connor, who plays Prince Charles. And then, of course, Olivia Colman, who plays Queen Elizabeth. So lots of really good awards. Definitely the streaming dominated the award season for the 2021 Emmys. Did you manage to watch any Emmys by chance?
No, but I watched the highlights come up on Twitter, and what's her name? Elizabeth Olsen, her dress was gorgeous, and her sisters made it, and I was super fan of her dress. It was so pretty and elegant. I was like, oh, my gosh, and then they were like, Mary-Kate and Ashley made it, and I was like, of course they did.
I need to check this dress out. I haven't seen it. But yeah, so
oh my God,
that's
it's
kind
so
of what happened.
It's so beautiful. Look it up.
I'll do it right now. Just in real time.
I'll do it right
like,
now.
So you can get
just
my,
in real time. Megan's
digit.
Reaction. Elizabeth Olsen's dress. It's like fitted in the back, but it's in the front. But in the back, it looks like it's like a queen's cape thing. What are those things called?
That's
a cape.
I mean, it is
really
super pretty.
Pretty,
I have to say. So, Megan
yeah.
approved.
It's very elegant for Emmy.
Yeah. Good dress. I'm going to change the subject because fashion is definitely not my strong point.
No, not at all. It's not really mine either. I just thought she looked nice.
Yeah. I think it's pretty, but I have no authority on the subject matter. all right, Kristen. Let's go on to TV show that you are watching right now that you think people should either avoid at all costs or should watch. So,
I'm laughing because in the last 24 hours I've started watching the most ridiculous show, but it's like watching a train wreck. You can't peel your eyes away. But my best friend got me hooked on 90 Day Fiancé. Guys, is the most ridiculous thing. And I'm like, I'm basically holding a red flag, waving it for these people. I'm like, don't do it. Fascinatingly terrifying to watch these people do this. So that's what I've been watching. Would I recommend it? I don't know. I mean, I guess it's fun to watch.
if you want something to veg on.
Right. Like, if you want to, like, kind of laugh and do other things, and, like, if you want to cringe a lot, 90 Day Fiancé is your jam. I literally signed up for Discovery Plus just so I could watch it. So, you're fast.
Okay.
And then the other one is I watched the 9/11 show on Netflix. So, Hulu, One Day in America. I'm working on the Netflix one right now. So 9/11, yeah. One Day in America, it was put by Hulu, National Geographic, and it was really well done. It's not political like the Netflix one is, but mm-hmm. it's a breakdown. So the National Geographic got with the 9/11 Memorial and Museum, and they've been collecting over the last 20 years videos and such pictures of that day that anyone has. And they piece yeah. together the whole day in video. So it's fascinating to watch. Like, you see the plane hit the first building because you're following firefighters that happen to have a camera crew with them that day. And that's a lot of the video. And then you get videos of people, like, they interview survivors, and they have pictures of those people, like, running from the building that somebody somewhere just happened to snap at that exact moment. So it was really yeah. fascinating to watch. It's really sad because you hear about a lot of deaths, of course. And, like, one guy survived both towers collapsing while he was at the Marriott, which is attached to the North Tower. So mm-hmm. it's just crazy. Like, stories I've never heard of in 20 years. And I've done a lot of 9/11 reading because I was a teenager when that happened. So it was just really well yeah. done. And I think everyone should watch it because it was fascinating to watch.
I don't know how you did it, Kristen, to be able to pick two things that you watched that have the number 9 in it that are very different tones.
Oh, my God, they're so like different opposite tones. I think I'm watching 90 Day like, Beyond today to, like, lighten my mood from watching the 9/11 stuff.
I've been hearing a lot about the 9/11 documentaries, both the Netflix and the Hulu. I have a hard time. I don't know if it's because it all happened when I was a freshman, but I have a hard time watching 9/11 stuff. So, like, if I do watch it, it will have to be, like, in little spurts. Because for some reason, I just get, like, way too emotional about that day. But I have heard nothing but good things about this one, as well as the Netflix documentary. But it is definitely hard to watch. Definitely some of those images are hard to take in. But it is super important to remember that day for what it was, right? So, very cool. Well, mine isn't yeah. as crazy bipolar as Kristen.
Never.
They're loosely related. So, I am obsessed. And when I say obsessed, I don't mean like I just like it. I mean, I'm obsessed. And I haven't been really obsessed with something in quite some time. Like, usually, like, all of my obsessions right now are things that I've always been obsessed with, or I've been obsessed with for, like, 5 years, like Harry Potter, Doctor Who. So this is a new obsession, and I'm very excited to have a new obsession, and that's the show Titans, which is based off of the DC Comics. Do you know anything about the Titans, Kristen?
You mentioned them once before that you were watching them, and you told me a little bit about them then.
Yeah. So Titans is the story of, so Robin, Dick Grayson's Robin, is trying to break away from the shadow of Batman, and he creates his own team with other young superheroes. So in this Titans, it follows Dick Grayson's Robin that turns into Nightwing, Beast Boy, Raven, Starfire, Wonder Girl, Superboy, Hawk, Dove. And I just really like the show because the characters are super interesting, but also because it's a pretty dark, gritty TV series. And usually Titans is not really done in a very gritty way. There's been a couple of animated series on TV that people know more about. The Titans, and of course the comics are always gritty, but it's just cool to see Titans on the screen in such a gritty way, and the characters are super interesting, and you do get really into the plot, and I'm super obsessed with both Dick Grayson, Nightwing / Robin, and Gar Logan, who is Beast Boy, and I like them for two very different reasons. And I mentioned this on Facebook the other day that one of the reasons why I like Beast Boy is because he gives me Ron Weasley vibes, which, as everyone knows, it's her conversations about Harry Potter. I kind of love Ron Weasley. I just vibe with him as a person, so it's cool to see this kind of take on a superhero with some Ron Weasley vibes into the mix. So I definitely recommend it. It's on HBO Max. And then the other show, which is loosely related, which is Doom Patrol, which is also a DC Comics TV series. It's definitely more on the weirder side. The characters are definitely stranger powers, definitely weirder concepts, definitely more abstract, but just as entertaining. So those are my two TV recommendations for you.
All right. It sounds like you are watching things that are kind of lighthearted, but like almost like make you feel like a kid again, but they aren't like necessarily like cartoons you would watch when you were a child, like a small child.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with superheroes right now. I rewatched all the Marvel. I think it's because of all the crazy that's coming along. So yeah, I think it gives me the kid feeling of like being obsessed with something and like learning about this new world and like getting being really excited about it, but the TV show itself is definitely not lighthearted. I would not say, but the characters are definitely cool, and it's just fun to be obsessed with something.
That's awesome.
All right, so get on to books. So what's going on in the fiction world?
All right, so there's been a lot of shuffle up. So we've got number five right now is A Slow Fire Burning, which I didn't write down the author. I will look it up. But it's kind of right up my alley, so it's fine. Three women come under scrutiny when a young man is found gruesomely murdered in a London houseboat. And it is by Paula Hawkins. And that's been fairly new. It's only 2 weeks out. In fourth, we've got Billy Summers by Stephen King. And again, right up my alley, a killer for hire who only takes out bad guys seeks redemption as he does one final job. And that's new.
Interesting.
And then I would read every book in the top five right now. Number three is It Ends With Us by Colleen Hoover. Been there for 13 weeks. She's one of my favorite authors. And this is a battered wife raised in a violent home attempts to halt the cycle of abuse. Curious. I've read a lot of her books. Book club's actually getting ready to read one of her books, and I'm very excited for that. Second is Beautiful World, Where Are You? By Sally Rooney. A novelist, a warehouse worker, and an editorial assistant and a political advisor deal with changes. I always like stories where you get four different people or five different people or three different people or whatever it is. And you're seeing, like, they're completely separate lives, but how much they might have in common and not even realize something like that. And then in first is New Book by J.D. Robb, which is the alternate name for Nora Roberts. It's called Forgotten in Death. It's the 53rd book in the In Death series. The property where a decades-old crime occurred belongs to the homicide detective Eve Dallas's husband. So I'm kind of intrigued. I want to read all 53 now.
The fact that the 53rd has gotten on number one in the bestsellers list is kind of insane. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
53rd. Wow. All right. Well, in the nonfiction world, it looks like it's a lot of political partisanship in this list. But number five is The Bright Future by Bobby Hall, which is the hip-hop recording artist known as Logic, tells his life story. And I haven't read this book, but I know a little bit in pieces of his life. He definitely has an interesting life. So if you're interested, definitely check it out. Number four is Beautiful Country by Kian Julie Wang. A seven-year-old girl and her parents encountered difficulties in New York City when they leave China in the 1990s. So a book that's looking into xenophobia and kind of the anti-Chinese sentiment that is always been in this country that comes in waves. So definitely a good story to know more about so we can continue to examine ourselves when it comes to these issues. Number three is The Body Keeps the Score. It's been on for 55 weeks. How Trauma Affects the Body and Mind and Innovative Treatments for Recovery. There's been a lot of new research when it comes to trauma and its impact on the brain, personality, and relationships. So this is one of many books that have been out lately that talk about it. Number two is Countdown Bin Laden by Chris Wallace and Mitch Weiss, which is new to the list. The intelligence gathering, security strategizing, and military planning during the final 8 months of the pursuit of Osama bin Laden. So if you're interested in how we were able to bring him down or how why it took so long to bring him down, it will lay out that story. And number one, I'm just going to be straight up honest with you. Please don't read it. But
good Lord. Oh, my God. I saw this and I was like, ew.
please don't read it. But if you, you know, just for the sake of just being honest about the world, it is American Marxism by Mark R. Levine. It's been on for 9 weeks. He is a Fox News host. And it's his take on how the Green New Deal critical race theory, which is the bane of my existence, and social activism is this newfound Marxism that has taken a grip on the United States, and that liberals are just Marxists who want to ruin everything. So very biased, just as much as my commentary on this book is biased.
I'm totally biased, but don't read that book. I'm sure he has nothing but lovely things to say about all of those
honestly don't need to read it. I told you exactly what he says. Caring about the environment and wanting to spend money on it is Marxism. Wanting to learn about racism and inequalities in the country is also Marxism. And protesting and giving your voice to things is Marxism. So... and then you can read, you know, Karl Marx and see if it actually is Marxism. So,
Jesus.
Yeah, it's up to you. But there's that. So that is our nonfiction list for this week. So, Kristen, what do you have for book recommendations?
All right. So book recommendations. I've been reading really fast lately because I'm behind. So I would recommend The Necklace by Matt Whitten. I finished it probably about a week ago, and it was fascinating. It was about a mom whose daughter had gone missing 20 years before, and the killer was finally, after all the appeals, was going to be executed. And she was going to travel across the country to see the execution. And on the way, information gets to her in ways I won't tell you because I'll spoil the story. That makes her think that maybe he didn't do it. And so it's all about her trying to get someone to listen to her and believe her, to at least look into it and see if what she's been told and learned fits the story. So it's really, really good. And it's an independent writer, so definitely support him. He emailed me that book like 7 months ago. And I was waiting for the release date to post near. And so it's either out or I think it actually came out today. The Necklace by Matt Whitten. Read it. And then I also read The Auschwitz Photographer by Luca Crippa. He wrote, it's the story of Wilhelm Brast, who was, a prisoner in Auschwitz, who was a photographer in his previous life. And he was a political prisoner. So he could have, he was half German, but refused that side of himself. He said, I'm Polish. I will not work with you. And so they threw him in prison. But he was a really good photographer. So he was the Auschwitz photographer. He took photos of the prisoners and of the medical procedures that crazy doctor did. And it's his story, but kind of written like it's fiction. So it reads really well. Like it's not like reading a documentary type of, you know, it's not right. Nonfiction. It doesn't read like that. So it flows really well. It's really sad, but it's also really hopeful because you hear a lot about how prisoners helped each other out along the way. So I would definitely read both.
For
of those.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's, I really enjoy biography type of writing that feels more of like a storytelling, like you're like you're around a campfire and someone's just telling you the story of someone's life. It makes it a much more enjoyable read, and you can get to the emotion of what this person or the people that he's talking about kind of going through. So as soon as you, because you did a review for it, and so I read it and I was like, oh, I already put it on my list. So it's on my list of things to read because it sounds awesome.
Yeah. It was good.
So Kristen, what are you currently reading?
I'm reading a YA fiction novel called This Is Why We Lie by Gabriella Lepore. It comes out, I think, next Tuesday. I'm reading it for their book tour that's going on right now. And it gives me vibes like One of Us is Lying, which I know a lot have read before because it's in the top five right now on New York Times bestsellers for YA fiction. And so it's about a boarding school, which I have this weird obsession with boarding school stories. And one of the girls is found dead, and there's a girls' school and a boys' school, and one of the boys found her. And it kind of flashes back and forth so far from, like, current time when she's already dead to, like, before she was dead. And I think they're building up to the moment she died so we can figure out who did it.
Makes sense.
But I don't know. What are you reading?
For me, I just started this. I don't really have, like, a full picture of it yet. It's Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. Malcolm Gladwell is one of my favorite podcasters. So he has a podcast called Revisionist History. And he just has he's just so interesting in the topics that he chooses and the way that he explains it. And kind of like that storytelling thing that I was telling you, like, he has a storytelling voice. So even though you're learning about statistics and history and, like, things that are going on in the world, it doesn't really feel like you're reading something that is, like, educational, if that makes sense. But what Blink is that he examines the first instincts that people have that say this is wrong, this is right, and how accurate those first instincts are. And telling stories of, like, people's first instincts and then being completely right, and how sometimes we overthink, and that overthinking actually leads to more problems, which is completely interesting because you've, like, in terms of, like, how we've been taught and raised, we've always been taught to, like, not trust your instincts, like, to do research, to read more, to put, you know, more thought into something. So it's interesting to see him take a look at the other side that actually, you know, like, your instincts are pretty good if you know, and you can save a lot of money, time, and pain by not going the route of overthinking. So, I'm only three chapters in, but so far I'm pretty intrigued because it really does go against like I'm ADHD, so no one's ever told me not to think. Usually it's like, you need to slow down. Think more, like, before you act. So it's just
slow down.
It's just an interesting take, yeah. All right, any updates on the book club before we get into our main discussion?
There's not too much. So we took September off, Liz and I, and gave everyone a free read month. Just read whatever you want. We asked a few questions throughout the month, like what everyone's reading, but otherwise we've just kind of been chill. And we're about to kick off October here in another week and a half or so, and we announced we will be doing Hopeless by Colleen Hoover for October. It's a YA fiction. It's kind of a mystery as well. I've actually read it before, but I'm super excited to read it again because, again, Colleen Hoover is one of my favorite authors. It's a fantastic book. It gives me the Girl on the Milk Carton vibe, if anyone's ever seen that movie or read the book. Same type of story. So join us on book clubs. You can join us on Facebook, Just One More Chapter Book Club, and then you can link over to book clubs because we have the links up, and the discussions happen on book clubs. So join us.
Very cool. All right, Kristen, we get to talk about Harry Potter.
Don't even have to ask me. I'm ready.
Yep, you good? Cool. All right, so we've already talked about the first two books. So how we're doing this is, instead of doing an overarching conversation about Harry Potter, we are really kind of micro diving in per book. So we're trying our best to really focus in on the individual book as is, without pulling from different things, to really just kind of focus our thoughts. So we always start off with this. So in terms of the Prisoner of Azkaban story, what do you notice about the themes or the kind of the main topics that this book tackles?
I would say, I don't know. This one's darker in my opinion. The mood, I feel like as the Harry Potter books go along, they get darker and darker and darker because you're getting farther and farther towards, or closer and closer towards, like all out war. So this one's definitely darker. Also I feel like they're at this age where they're kind of, they're no longer children, and they're starting to be treated and, you know, even act like those teenagers and those, you know, kind of having to grow up fast. So I definitely think there's, like, a coming-of-age thing. There's definitely, like, a dark and broody story. And then one of my favorite topics, which we'll talk about, is time. There's a large time aspect in this story, which, again, we'll talk about later. But that would be my idea of the definite themes in the book.
Definitely. I agree with you with time. Like, just in terms of, like, obviously with the time turner, which we'll talk more about in a little bit, and Hermione's use of it and how there's not enough time for things.
Right.
And I also feel like with this one in particular, like the first book has a bit of a mystery trying to figure out who's trying to get the stone, right? And Chamber of Secrets has some mystery that's like, okay, so who's opening the Chamber of Secrets? But it's a mystery, but it's not at the same time, because at both times, the person behind it is Voldemort, right? I mean,
right.
We
it's
all kind
Voldemort.
Of know it's going to end, it's always going to end up with this. But in terms of, like, how Prisoner of Azkaban is written, it is definitely written in a, like, a kind of like a murder mystery vibe, in my personal opinion, because you have not only, like, all the things with Voldemort and all the things that is, like, the overarching big plot, but you also have this, you know, new person that you learn about, Sirius Black. And most of the book, you're trying to figure out who Sirius Black is and if he's a friend or if he's a foe, if he's trying to kill Harry or not. And so, to me, it's kind of like added a new layer to the book. So, I also think, obviously, I think with this book, misconception seems to be a theme, because the things that we think are true end up not being true, right? That Sirius Black is this massive killer who's out on the loose. Well, it turns out he was set up. That Scabbers is a rat that is Ron's pet. Well, actually, turns out he's a gross, creepy person who is responsible for Harry's parents' death in part. The idea of just what you think is true is not being true. And then I agree, there's definitely a coming age in terms of identity. And obviously this is when teenage hormones kick in. It's around the right time, right? It's 13. And so complications start to arise in certain relationships. This is when you see the increase in the bickering between Ron and Hermione. Although they always bickered, but it increased. And just, you know, trying to figure out who they are and wanting to get some more independence. And so I think a lot of those things are definitely in the book. But I think the idea of misconception seems to be really big in this story in particular. In terms of, like, your favorite books, where does Prisoner of Azkaban rank? Like, if you had to give it a number.
Okay, so... Man. I'd say the Deathly Hallows books are probably my top favorites. I'd say Prisoner of Azkaban is probably, like, 4th.
Okay.
In my favorite, so it's like dead center. It's like, I like it, a lot, but there's other ones I love, love, love. And so that's the only reason it doesn't get higher. It's not that there's nothing wrong with it. I enjoy it, but that's it.
I think it's what it's probably in my top three, in my personal opinion. I think, though, like, the things that I get really nerdy about are, like, the bigger world things. But what I think a Prisoner of Azkaban does, and why I think, is that it's a very tightly told story. So everything, I think, in Prisoner of Azkaban had a purpose, and it was told that it's probably one of the neatest and tightest story that J.K. Rowling has written in the series. Whether you think it's the most interesting or not, that's a different question. But it definitely, it just feels like it's the most compact, most focused of all of the stories in the series.
I would agree on that. It's a very focused story. There's not a lot going on. There's really a focal storyline that you're following.
And she sticks to it pretty well, which is why I think it was the easiest easiest book to turn into a movie. Because I don't think anything was left out. Characterization? Different story. We'll get there. But in terms of, like, what is included in the film, it was pretty much all there because of how neatly wound the story is. All right, so let's get into it. So obviously in this book, we were introduced to some new characters, some great, some not so great. And one of the first characters that we are introduced to is the lovely Aunt Marge.
I hate her.
That was the correct response. So Aunt Marge, in case you've forgotten, is the aunt that Harry blew up. Totally justified in doing that, by the way. I have no bad feelings about him performing magic illegally to make that point. She's a pretty horrific person. And because of that, because he blew up his aunt, he has to leave the Dursleys' premises because it happens over the summer and people who are underage and are allowed to use magic in that capacity. And so when he runs away, he discovers what is known as the Night Bus. Now, when you were reading about the Night Bus for the first time, what was your impression of it? And would you want to ride in the Night Bus?
I get extremely car sick, so no, I wouldn't want to ride it because it sounded terrible. Just, you know, flying around and how crazy he drove. It's funny, I've recently reread this book and just, you know, now having seen the movies and going back to it, like, I just really love the descriptions in the books themselves. And the Night Bus sounds cool, but just the way they describe, like, kind of flying around and, you know, he's holding on and I don't know. I think I would throw up, but I thought it was a very cool thing. I was like, oh, that would be awesome to have just like a bus that shows up and takes you where you need to go when you're in trouble. Like, how ideal of a world would that be?
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. I think the description of the Night Bus is super fun, and I like the idea of the Night Bus because, like, when car alarms do randomly go off for no reason, I still to this day think Night Bus. Like, that has to do
the Night Bus went by.
The Night Bus did it. And it just captures your imagination. The practicalities of the Night Bus, though, I think I would have definitely throw up or at least have a concussion from ramming into the sides of it when it stops abruptly. But it would be very nice in L.A. traffic, I would have to say. That's probably the only time where I think I would willingly get onto the Night Bus is just to avoid L.A. in general and the driving conditions there.
That's funny. You're like, just take me in the Night Bus. Screw L.A. traffic.
Get me out of here. Please take me off of the 405. All right, so then we get a little, like, we've heard Cornelius Fudge in passing, you know, a little bit about him. Harry meets up with Cornelius Fudge at the Leaky Cauldron, and, of course, he's afraid that he's going to be kicked out of school. Cornelius Fudge does not. I have always, like, even before the whole not believing Harry about Voldemort returning, Cornelius Fudge has just always come across as an idiot. Like some bumbling idiot who really doesn't know what he's doing.
yeah.
And even in the scene with Prisoner of Azkaban, as I reread it to kind of prepare for this, I was like, man, he really was a leader of such superficialness in the way that he does everything. So, like, Harry is this hero that he can use, and so he's being super nice. And then when Harry doesn't, you know, fit his purpose anymore, he's completely awful to him. So Cornelius Fudge is just, he's horrible. He's stupid. I don't like him. Worst leader ever.
I don't like him.
Not actually, no, not worst leader ever. One of the worst leaders ever. So in terms of let's do a new characters first. So Remus Lupin,
yeah,
who is one of we both mentioned is one of our favorite characters. He gets introduced into this story. So just talking about the third book, not later on, why did you think that Remus Lupin was your favorite character of this book?
I like him because he was so, like, accepting. And in a world, even when Harry Potter first came out, in a world where, like, acceptance sometimes is really hard to come by, like, Lupin just was nice to everyone. He instantly protected Harry when he needed to, you know, took him under his wing. He's just, like, he gave off really good vibes in a book that didn't have good vibes. Like,
yeah,
again, it was, to me, it was a very dark book, and Lupin was, like, that, we'll say that full moon that gave us a little bit of light.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Like, obviously, I'm a teacher, so, like, if I had to pick, like, two teachers to combine that I wish was me, It would probably be Remus Lupin and Mr. Feeny. I love the way he is he just approaches his mentorship in such a, like, just a wise, calm, even-keeled way. But also there's, like, a little mischievous into him, and you know that he's mischievous. But he's super smart. And I also enjoy the werewolf angle for him and the way that it was told. I didn't so much like the way that they portrayed the werewolf look in the movie. It was probably the most pathetic werewolf I've ever seen in my life. But I do like that kind of, like, scholarly, wise, but kind of lonely figure that Remus Lupin was in this book in particular. And I think he was really good for Harry. I think it was good to have someone at Hogwarts that isn't as elusive as Dumbledore to be there for him in this particular moment of his story. And so that's why I really enjoy Remus Lupin as a character, especially in this part of the story. And then, of course,
I agree. I just feel like, I like Sirius. I just like his name, too.
Yes, it's perfect for him. So Sirius Black obviously starts off as being seen as a potential danger, but we later learn he is not dangerous at all. He's, in fact, James Potter's best friend, part of this friend group called the Marauders, which includes Remus, as well as Sirius Black and James Potter. So, Sirius Black, what is your take and thoughts?
I guess if I'm talking specifically this book, most of it, you really don't know much. You don't, you get the vibe, or I got the vibe that, like, we shouldn't hate him. Like, his behavior was very odd. Like, it seemed like there were, if Harry was his true goal, there were plenty of ways for that Harry to have gotten, them to got, him to get to Harry throughout the book. So it just seemed kind of like we shouldn't hate him, but we're supposed to hate him because he's supposed to be this bad guy that's trying to kill Harry. And then at the end, when you know, it's revealed that he's not this terrible person, it kind of made, Sirius Black kind of made me warm and fuzzy. Like, he was that, he's that, like, disgruntled, angry uncle that you just adore, even though, like, he's angry sometimes. And, like, because Sirius is angry, obviously, for being wrongfully imprisoned for so long. And he really doesn't get to go, you know, going forward in other words, he doesn't get to just be free. So, like, he's, yeah, like, that's what I remember. Like, he was super nice, but he has, like, an inner bubbling of emotion that at any point could come out.
But yeah, for sure. And it makes, and it makes total sense because of, not only was he in prison for killing his best friend, which he did not do, he's also surrounded by those Dementors, which we'll talk about in a second, which are not friendly by any means. So there's a lot of, I think, a lot of horrific things he had to deal with, which wasn't really explored too much in the book. But you can see that, not so much in this particular story, but you can see it more,
right,
as we get to know him, the effects of having to deal with this post-prison world, which I think is, I wish that it would have explored that a little bit more. Just psychologically, I think that'd be interesting. All right, so for, and then of course we have Peter Pettigrew.
Yeah.
AKA Scabber. Peter Pettigrew is an evil Gryffindor, so I think that's something that's just for my Slytherin brethren to point that out. He is an evil Gryffindor. So he is a Gryffindor that is really wanted to be friends, really wanted to be kind of be with powerful people because he felt very powerless. And so he joins the ranks of Voldemort, betrays his friends, and at the end of the story, of course, he goes back to Voldemort to do his bidding now that he has been found out for his role with the Potters as well as his connection with Voldemort himself. But it's kind of creepy. I mean, he was sleeping with Ron in his bed for a good amount of years. That is dedication on Peter Pettigrew's part.
That was dedication. Like, that's kind of creepy, honestly.
To stay
weirdo
in the bed with the same person over and over again. Another thing that this particular book, I think, does well, and what makes it so fascinating, is just the introduction to some really cool things. Like, Dementors are weird and horrible and grotesque and represents,
yep,
and it just drains the joy out of you. And apparently you need chocolate to feel better. All reasons.
Which is fine by me.
But the idea of that, the idea that there is this creature, I don't even know what to call it, but like this creature, this thing that literally just drains the joy from you, and that the way that they don't kill you, they take your soul from you, is such an interesting thing to be developed, in my opinion. And I hope to God nothing like that actually exists. Another thing that was introduced in this series, I mean, life is already soul-sucking. We don't need
it. Right. That needs help.
We don't need dementors. But it also introduces a couple of things that I think really are telling of humankind and the idea of identity. So first we have the Bogart, which can turn into anything that you fear most. So Ron turns into a spider, which, again, when we talked about the second book, it's not that he faced spiders, which he hates. He faced his number one fear. So just giving props to Ron there. Or, and then Hermione, it's like being yelled at by teachers, right? So this idea that something can manifest to become your worst fear is such a fascinating conversation to have with someone. What would be your Bogart, Kristen?
I was literally just like, what would be my Bogart? my Bogart would probably be a clown covered in spiders. And if we're being specific, it'd be a clown covered in spiders inside of a box nailed shut, hanging over water, deep water. Okay. That would be like the ultimate terror fest.
On top of a bridge, too. You're
right.
Hanging from
the bridge. Hanging off the bridge over the water. Like, worst
nightmare.
Man,
that would be,
right,
yeah,
there.
That'd be bad. I think mine would probably be a plane crash. I think that is probably the thing that I get the most nervous about. I don't know why. I travel too, like I face it all the time, but I'm always just deathly afraid I'm going to die in a plane crash.
Well, when you were in fairness, when fine. You were a child, terrorists flew planes into buildings. So that's a fair fear. Fair.
It's even before that, like when I was traveling, like when I was like 7 going to Hawaii with my parents, I remember just being like, Mom, can I be in your lap? And she's like, you're 7. I'm not going to be able to save you. She didn't say that, but she should have, because that would have been the truth. Now, there was nothing my mom could do in that situation if it happened. And then Patronus, which is also like such an interesting concept that you can develop something based on your happy thoughts that will manifest itself into an animal that represents you as a person. So Ron gets a Jack Russell, and then Harry Potter has a male deer, an elk. So I took the Pottermore quiz, and apparently mine is a hedgehog, which has taken me many years to accept. But
I think that's appropriate because they look cute and fluffy, but they will stab the shit out of you if you screw with them.
Yeah. Hedgehog unite.
Yeah.
They'll
like claw your face off. I'm just saying.
I got you. And so like just like so in both the Bogart and the Patronus has to do with identity, like right, your true self. What is most important, your true fear. And so these things that J.K. Rowling is developing into the world and that we're introducing in this book really does have a tie to self, which I think is super interesting. And then you mentioned the time turner as being something specifically fascinating or interesting in this novel. So what is your take on the Harry Potter time turner time travel situation?
So I found it fascinating that, as in most shows or movies, you do not mess with time. So in this, the time turner is a little like hourglass. You flip it for so long, and it takes you back. And Hermione uses it throughout the book to get to classes. She's taking too many classes. And it's funny because, like, the guys notice that she's kind of appearing and disappearing, but they don't, like,
correct
to them. She's not
correction.
Appearing and disappearing. She's just...
Correction. Ron notices.
Oh, yeah. So Harry's just like, what? But, like, he notices, but he's like, she must have just snuck in. Like, he's not wrapping his head around that she's actually appearing. And then at the end, it's a huge thing because it allows Harry and Hermione and them to go back to kind of right some wrongs. And they're kind of messing with time, but they don't. They never let themselves see themselves for the most part. They do get a glimpse, apparently. But it's just fascinating that it doesn't matter what genre we're in, what book or movie or whatever you're watching or reading, like, the number one rule, you do not mess with time.
Yes, because it just becomes so complicated.
You do not mess with the storyline. Right.
Yeah. And I think because the time travel was so simple, I was able to buy it. So, because usually, like, my mantra is one way you can ruin a story is to introduce time travel. because
right.
you have to explain it, and you have to explain it well, and you have to have rules, and you have to be very consistent with those rules in order for it to make sense. This was a very simple task that Harry and Hermione did. They knew that they couldn't interact with themselves, and so therefore it didn't bother me. What did bother me was the staff agreeing for Hermione to take that many classes. Like,
right, that bothered me too. You didn't think she'd get overwhelmed?
Sometimes you just need to sit down those perfectionist children and just be like, no, go outside, enjoy your life, be a child. And that was the conversation that needed to happen. But it was definitely
convenient.
With
the Time Turner and Ron noticing her kind of being there and not being there. Like, Ron gets a lot of flack for kind of being the dumb one. But I'm telling you, he was on point. He was like, how are you taking arithmetic when that's during divination? Like, how are you doing that? That's not possible. And, you know, they always brush him off. But, like, get it, Ron. You solved the crime.
I think his crush might have played a part in that, to be fair. But I agree, he is not stupid. That judgment of Ron really does come from the movies, and sadly you watch the movies more than you read the books, and so I think that's just, I think that attitude has replaced over time who Ron is as a person. But if you take Ron in the books, he is very strategizing. He is very strategic. He is very perceptive. He is a pretty good judge of character as well.
But he's very much the emotional one. He reacts on emotion rather than, like, he reacts before he thinks. And he's very smart.
Like,
after the fact, he's like, oh, well, this would have made way more sense had I just processed it for a second. But I think that's where, like, I think that's where they pulled it for the movies. Like, they made him look dumb.
Yeah. I think
because, like,
reasons,
if you take it, he acts before he thinks about it. And he's not dumb. He's emotional. He runs on emotion.
He definitely has impulse. He is impulsive for sure. But impulsive does not
definitely mean
stupid or not intelligent. So
no, not at all.
I
think they twisted it in the movie to be stupid.
I think so too. I think it was also for comedic relief and other things too. And also, we won't talk about it too much, but also we get introduced to two new subjects, Care of Magical Creatures, which Hagrid is teaching, and then, of course, Divination with Professor Trelawney, who is a kook, Emma Thompson, beautifully. And then, of course, one of my favorite things, which is the Marauder's Map, which is what is the twins give Harry, which is a map of the school, and you can see where everyone is on this particular map.
I have a t-shirt.
And, it's such a cool concept, and it makes me wish that, you know, J.K. Rowling's writing a lot of extra stuff for Harry Potter. I think she should just do, a Fred and George series. exploring their exploits at school, because you know they had a lot of fun at Harvard.
And can we also explore from the moment they leave school to starting the joke shop and stuff, like that gap in time? Can we have a novella?
Stop writing extra stuff, J.K. Rowling. Just, you know, take what you have and expand on it. But also a revisionist. Don't be a revisionist author, She is doing that on a couple.
Lord have mercy.
So just to kind of conclude our discussion, there is two things that I want to say, and they're all one and the same, which is I have absolutely no issues with Prisoner of Azkaban as a movie. I think they chose to highlight the right things. I think it is a very entertaining movie. I think it's definitely probably the biggest, the cleanest transition between book and movie, and I think it's because it has such a tightly knit plot. But one of my favorite scenes in the book and it's because I'm a Ron person, and I just admire Ron's loyalty. I tend to gravitate towards characters that have a really grand sense of just standing up for people and just standing by people. And that is when they're in the shrieking shack, and Sirius Black at this point is what they think is a killer. They're meant to do harm against Harry. Obviously, that turns out to be wrong. Ron has a broken leg. He's in lots of pain. He by no means can do any damage to anyone.
Right.
Stands up on that broken leg in front of Harry and says, "If you want Harry, you have to go through me." One of my favorite, like, even before I watched, like, anything and I was into Harry Potter, that is probably one of my favorite scenes. The movie, and this is why I have a hard time watching Prisoner of Azkaban, even though it is a very good movie. The writers decided to give that line to Hermione and made Ron sit on the bed and whimper like a baby in pain. And that is probably the worst change in the whole movies, in my opinion, because it is so not Ron. Ron is not that person. There's no need to give it to Hermione. There's just like, there's no film reason for it. There's no like camera angle reason for it. It was a choice made by the
screenwriter. She was strong enough already. She didn't need it. Yeah.
No. And so, and it just, I think it was that moment that solidified movie Ron as a buffoon. And it has nothing to do with Rupert Grint's acting. He's a great actor. I think he would have done an amazing Ron if he was written the way he was supposed to be written. So that's my only thing about the movie, is that scene killed me. I remember leaving the theater after watching that movie for the first time, livid. I probably ranted to my friends for a good 20 minutes. And they're like, "What about the other things, Megan?" I'm like, "I don't care. This was egregious." But yeah, so that
redo it.
Did you have any thoughts on the movie?
So I'm doing this thing where so I've read the books, I've seen the movies, and I'm listening to the audiobooks. And I will say, I agree with you that the books to that movie transition was significantly different for Ron's character. I can definitely see that. There's lots of little things. I had some things in my mind that I was like, that doesn't happen for all of these books, and I can't find my list, which makes me upset, because there's little things, and I know little things don't usually make movies, but there's so many details in the book that don't make the movie that I think are so important. Just little things, like you never hear, and not just, I know we're talking about this book, but just an example that I can pull out of my hat right now, is like you don't really hear about Neville's story in the movies all that much. They're so detailed in the books, and you learn every little detail. And I feel like that's the thing. Like, they took little details about Ron and changed them. And just, like, there's a few little things in the Time Turner trip that are a little bit different in this. Just tiny differences. But, like, I'm like, that's a big difference. It seems like nothing. It's like a word in a book, literally. But it's so different. And so that was my thing. Like, I like this movie, but I prefer the book, most definitely.
I prefer the book as well, mainly because that's where Ron is actually Ron.
Right.
You know. I'm trying to get over it. I'm talking it out, trying to get over it, but it's hard. I will never get over it. Let's just be honest. And then also, you've been doing the audiobook. I know that we've been talking for the last couple of books about how the audiobook itself kind of changes your perception on characters, just because of the way the narrator chooses to play that particular character or how he plays the scene. Did you notice anything that like that with Prisoner of Azkaban?
Professor Trelawney's voice, the voice that Jim Dale does in the books I'm reading, Jim Dale is the narrator. He is fantastic, by the way. He nails a lot of them. Trelawney's voice, she talks like this, and it's so weird. And, like, but he nails that, like, whimsical, but she has this really, really deep, like, almost manly voice. And every time she talks, I laugh. I can't not laugh. When I was doing it, I was like, I can't, like, it doesn't match Trelawney. It, okay, so in the movie when Trelawney prophesizes to Harry, for real, that's how her voice is the entire book.
For the entire time. So not with, during the prophecy,
yeah,
but for, like, how's the weather.
Right, she has, like, this very deep, like, you're going to die. And I know she kind of has a deeper voice anyway, but it's just, it was just funny to me. I couldn't, but otherwise, like,
awesome.
This is great. Remus Lupin was fantastic in this. I loved it. The words are pronounced differently. Like, in the movie, they say Animagus. I don't even know. But in the movie, it's Animagus.
Okay.
And they say another word weird, and I was like, it was like an everyday word, and I was like, that's how you say that word. But I'm American, too, so.
Yeah, I mean.
So, otherwise, this book, just like you said, this was one of the easiest movies to make transition-wise. It seemed pretty well transitioned. There's, in all the other books I've read so far on audio, there's major differences in just personalities, I think, based on the voice that's given to them. And, I can't wait for the next book, guys. I can't wait for Umbridge because her voice is hilarious. But, yeah. So
we have a couple more books.
The voice
where we get to her.
I know. I want to get there so bad. But
We'll get there.
Can we just skip?
All right.
Skip and then come back.
We cannot skip Goblet of Fire. All right. That is all we have time for. That was a really good discussion.
Yep.
So before we go, Kristen, what is your nerdy obsession?
Okay, so I'm a big, huge true crime nerd, and as everyone in the world knows right now, there's a huge true crime headline about Gabby Petito, who went missing on a road trip with her fiance, Brian Laundry, which his name even sounds dull, like I would not want a road trip with him. And she was found, and they just confirmed like an hour ago that the body they found in the Wyoming campground area was definitely her, and she was definitely murdered. And he is guilty of sin, and you will never convince me otherwise. Like, to that right now.
With
and
evidence
I'm also obsessed with Daniel
to
Robinson.
The contrary.
No, there's no evidence. He did it. It's like Casey Anthony, guys. Like, her kid was missing. She didn't call the police, and she went partying and got tattoos and wrote bad checks. Listen, I don't care what – you could literally hand me somebody that says, I did it, this is how I did it, this is where I did it, this is the knife, and I bet you're lying, because no mother in her right mind does what Casey Anthony did. There's nothing you can convince me. Just like Scott Peterson going Christmas fishing, he is guilty. Brian Laundry is guilty. You don't just show up back home with all her stuff and refuse to tell people where she's at, and refuse to talk to police, and get a lawyer, and then disappear. You're guilty, and I cannot wait till they lock you up. In other nerdy obsession, there's another true crime that's been making the rounds because of the Gabby Petito case brought some mention of it, and it's Daniel Robinson, who is a geologist for an engineering company. He was in the Arizona desert. He's a hydrogeologist. He went out in the desert regularly, but he went out in June, and he never came back. And mid-July, they found his car flipped over in a ravine. They say ravine. There's no water in it, guys. It's dry. It's the desert. But in a ravine, and they haven't found him. But they did find a skull that did not belong to him. So I'm really obsessed with true crime right now. You've got to leave me be. Because everyone's guilty.
Yeah, I'll let you because everyone's guilty. Everyone. My obsession is just Titans. I don't think I'm obsessing about anything else except for Titans. So that's my thing.
That's fair.
But that was really entertaining. I love that you taught everyone what a desert was.
There, I'm like, everyone's like, a ravine. It doesn't have water. I'm like, listen, stop it.
All right. Well, as always, we want your feedback on what to discuss in the world of nerddom, so please give us your feedback. Follow us at talknerdy_radio. We'd love to hear from you. Go to nerdprobs.com for reviews, articles, and blogs. I need to get my act together and start writing things. Just one more chapter book club. Come join. Join on Facebook, and that can get you to the right platform. We should be back as long as nothing weird happens. Next Tuesday to talk about music and movies. So everyone together as a collective, send positive vibes. The nothing weird
so we can be here
now, Tuesday, so that we can be here and discuss things and have fun.
Yay.
All right. All right, everyone, have a wonderful rest of your week, and we will see you guys later. Bye, everyone.
Bye.